welcome to First Things First. It is a Tuesday morning here in New York City.
Yeah, I forgot my glasses.
Oh, okay.
So I'm Jenna. That's Nick. You know who you are. So the glasses will hold off just for the first segment. Hall of Famer.
Nick, did you do something with your hair? Is that my eyesight?
It's coming in.
Every day
it's coming
the same
in.
Question.
Oh, I gotta get my glasses. Something.
Mm-hmm. No. Oh, God.
I don't have my glasses
nice.
Either.
Just turn it around on me
got
immediately.
A little velvet tie
Thank
here.
You very, I will give you credit. The velvet tie is something I learned from my good friend Chris Carter. I didn't even know that was a thing that existed. Saw yours, liked it so much.
No problem.
Went out
I can
and
get
got
you
one.
To kill the
On a related
piece, we'll
note.
No, will never happen. Will never happen. I love those. Hi, Jenna Wolf.
How are you? Thank you very much. I got the dress idea from C also. We wore it one day, and I felt like I had to. Big show today. The Giants might actually.
Just got to be included, man.
Oh, y'all talking about ties? Well, I learned about dresses from you.
I just feel like it's funny that that surprises you.
The bosses are in town. It'd be a good time to get fired.
Mm-hmm. Or start the show.
The New York Giants might actually pass on a quarterback with the 6th pick. Can you believe that? The Houston Rockets got blown out by the Jazz. We'll start with the NBA in the East, where for the first time since 2001, the Bucks have advanced in the playoffs. They finished up the sweep of the Pistons last night with a 127-104 win. Giannis put on a clinic, 41 points, his playoff career high, 9 rebounds, 4 blocks. The Bucks are moving on. They'll face the Boston Celtics in round 2. Here's Giannis after last night's win.
Just to win our first playoff series with this group right here, it's unbelievable. I think we played great basketball. We stuck together the whole series. Even though when we faced adversity and they were up, they were taking leads, they wasn't playing our best, I think we were able to just keep fighting, keep pushing as a group. And it feels good to win our first playoff series together.
All right, CC, Celtics swept, Bucks swept. The two now face off in the second round. How do these two teams match up with each other?
These two teams, I think these two teams match up fairly well until you get to that guy who was just talking right there.
Yeah.
Like, we can talk about all these other players. Oh, how are they going to do at the five? Oh, how is Kyrie going to do against Bledsoe? All that, I believe, negates itself. But Giannis, what is the answer to a young, up-and-coming superstar? Man, he's amongst just a handful of guys. 2 dribbles past midcourt, and he is at the rim. His ability to continue to shoot the jump shot and to watch his jump shot grow, his ability to be able to knock down free throws because he draws so many fouls. But we haven't seen this type of play unless you go back to the days of Shaq, as far as someone scoring in the paint, unassisted, and how he's doing is totally different than Shaq, but they end up with the same result. At the rim, close to the rim, are dunking the basketball. He's a special basketball player. It's going to be fun to watch him as he gets into the second round for the first time, because last night's game, you could see he just took over.
He took over when the Bucks took over. This was a game they're trailing.
Yes.
Midway through the third. And then they do what great teams do.
And like much respect to Detroit and what they were doing. And Blake Griffin playing out there with that mechanical knee brace on and everything. Detroit played well enough. Like, they weren't going to just surrender.
They weren't going to roll over. Yes. Usually if you're going to be overmatched in a series, but you're going to steal one, it's game 3. It's the game where it's like, oh, we're just back at home.
Yeah,
typically when you fall down 3-0, you wave the white flag, especially in a 1-8. Detroit was up late in the third quarter, and then Milwaukee did what great teams do. They went on a 45-10 run. A 45-10 run in about 12 minutes of basketball. Good night, good luck. We are now up by 30, which continued the trend in this series. They won games in this series by 35, 21, 16, and 23. And last night's 23, it would have been 30 if not for a late flurry by Detroit. But that continues the trend of Milwaukee this year. A league high 45 wins by double digits over the course of the regular season. Why am I so high on Milwaukee? Prior to them this year, Jenna, only 7 teams in NBA history had 45 plus or more wins by double digits. All of them won the title. Like, if we were not living in a Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson era, we would say Milwaukee is not just the heavy favorites to come out of the East, the heavy favorites to win the title, which is why I think yesterday when we talked about the Celtics series, a lot of people took my commentary as, oh, Knicks just hating on the Celtics again. It is less to do with Boston and more to do with the team that they're facing that I think is something of a juggernaut. We just don't know it because this is the first year, to your point, they've even won a single playoff series, much less advanced very deep into the playoffs.
Okay, so if we all agree that you can't stop Giannis, what kind of defense can Brad Stevens put together to at least slow him down and keep them in these games?
Well, the problem is they shoot the three-pointer so well. There is no team that is synced up offensively and defensively. Shoot the three well, defend the three well. If Giannis draws a double team, they have four shooters on the court almost at every at all points. And Brooke Lopez, I totally disagree with Mannix, who sat here yesterday, and Nick and I have been watching Brooke Lopez. Man, his game is special. I mean, we were kind of puzzled. Why didn't the Lakers, for only $3 million? And he's just changed his game.
If people didn't see, when you say you're puzzled by Mannix, Mannix yesterday said he thought Brooke Lopez could be played off the court in this series.
Right,
that
yes.
Boston could
He would be a liability.
Exactly.
And Nick and I don't agree with that because he's had a special season. 65% of his attempts at the field goal are beyond the three-point line. That's, his career was totally different before that. So now he is a great shooter at the three-point line, and you can bring him off. So now Giannis has plenty of space. Bledsoe is playing the most consistent basketball of his career. And I got to tell you, surprisingly, George Hill, who disappeared with the Cavs, has played in spot duty, has played some good basketball for the Bucks.
Who guards Giannis? If you look at the team, who do you have on Giannis?
I mean, listen, they'll start with – it'll be the same thing Boston tried to do last year with LeBron, which is we'll throw a bunch of bodies at him and they will all fail. Hey, Marcus Morris will try. Jaylen Brown will try, but he is not big enough. Semi Ojeleye will get some minutes because he's so strong, but he is not tall enough. Jason Tatum will get some minutes, but he is not thick enough. There is nobody. This is why when you say, how does Boston slow down Milwaukee? If Boston is going to make this a series, they're going to have to do it through putting together two of their best offensive weeks of basketball we've seen all year. Kyrie is going to have to be 25-plus points a night. Tatum's going to have to duplicate what he did in round one where he was extraordinary. Gordon Hayward is going to have to be the Gordon Hayward we saw momentarily in the fourth quarter of game four throughout the series. Like, the Gordon Hayward, every month of the season this year, averaged 10 or 11 points. They need him to average 18 or 19 points if they're going to find enough offense, because you are not holding Milwaukee under 95 points more than maybe once in this series.
Jenna, you can go up and down, and I challenge anyone. There's going to be eight teams in the second round. Go up and down the roster, and you see who can guard Giannis.
Correct.
You can ask that for anyone. I don't care who they play. Teams in the East, teams in the West, and that includes the Rockets and Golden State. Well, you mean Kevin Durant? No. This is a mismatch waiting to happen every series. This series, the finals in the East, if they make it to the NBA finals, and no matter who they are going against, there is no one in the NBA that can match up against Giannis at
and
this point in his career.
If you're going to slow Giannis down, the what you need more than a great perimeter defender, what you would need is a great rim protector, because Giannis does so much of his work at the rim. Rudy Gobert, his season's about to end, even though they extended it last night. A guy such as him, Joel Embiid, maybe if they were playing the conference finals, could at least at the rim give Giannis a little bit of trouble. But the Celtics don't have that guy.
Right.
The Celtics, it's Al Horford or it's Aaron Baines. Like, you can't, no matter how great of a perimeter defender you are, if you are going up against the league MVP or one of the MVP candidates, the offensive player almost always wins that matchup in the long run. You got to throw a bunch of bodies at him, which will mean the Bucks are going to have, in this series, an abundance of open three-pointers, of guys collapsing on Giannis. And if they miss their threes like Indiana did, then Boston have a real shot. I don't think they will, which is why I think Milwaukee's the heavy favorite.
And
this
Nick,
round.
You also believe from a coaching standpoint that Coach Bud is really underrated in the things that he's done
Correct.
To be able to bring out not only Giannis's talent, but the rest of that roster. You believe people
that's
aren't
the
giving
biggest
him
difference
enough.
Between Milwaukee this year and last year. It's not the evolution of Giannis, it's coaching. What Budenholzer's done all year has been brilliant.
All right, so the Bucks beat the Pistons last night. That is a sweep for them. They move on to the second round against the Celtics, most likely this weekend. That series opens up. Coming up, Kevin Durant's feud with the media continues. Wait till you hear it's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all your profits. Plus, there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of First Things First a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio design. Sign up at first.robinhood.com.
Welcome back. All right, we'll talk some Kevin Durant in a second. But first, couple of big plays from last night. Bucks Pistons. Giannis hanging in the air before finishing the layup.
Who did this remind you of, C?
Come on. MJ?
Yeah, it's different, but
against
it's similar.
The Lakers?
Yep, the iconic MJ play.
Yeah, this
the
is
Lakers.
This is more body contact, though. This was a nasty play right here, though.
Man, this guy. Watching
Bad
him
night.
Get better
game.
Every day.
This time, Giannis drives to the rim, finishes over Thon Maker.
Man, poor Thon Maker. Request a trade out of Milwaukee, man. I want more run. Didn't think that run would have Giannis just booming on him all series long.
No, he said, I don't want to run into Giannis. I want to run on the court with Giannis.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That's the problem, man. They got all those three-point shooters. You got to spread the court.
A hobbled Blake Griffin gets in transition, finishes at the rim with a group of Bucks closing in. Good night for him.
Oh, man, great. Now, I got to give credit. He's a pro's pro going out there jeopardizing your
Look
career.
Look at that thing on his
with
leg.
That apparatus. That was from the 60s, that knee brace. You got to give Blake credit. And this closeout, the last two games, man, he's played with a lot of heart.
All right, Rockets and Jazz, Donovan Mitchell, great extension, finishing the alley-oop.
What an awful fourth quarter for Houston. Credit to Royce O'Neal and Donovan Mitchell. Donovan was great in that fourth quarter, by the way. But the Jazz, after really controlling the first half of this game, Houston takes the lead going into the fourth and then goes ice cold in that fourth. And Donovan Mitchell outscored the Rockets as a team by himself.
Oh, he was special. He was special throughout the game.
Man, which is good because in this series, he's shooting like 35%. He needed one of these really good games.
All right, moving on to Kevin Durant. Okay. KD coming off a big game and a big win over the Clippers on Sunday. Of course, he couldn't just bask in that win. Instead, he was peppered with questions about his future. Hey, one thing's for certain. Wherever KD ends up, he will be the one curating the message. Here's Kevin Durant on his relationship with the media. He said, they need me. If I wasn't a free agent, none of this expletive would go on, right? None of this speculation about who I am, what's wrong with my mental, why I'm miserable, why I ain't happy with life.
Wow.
Nothing. Got a big wow from CC. See, what was your reaction to KD's comments?
Jenna, did you bring a card in? Potentially we can get him to maybe get some counseling from someone that you might know.
I mean,
with KD, this is the thing. I'm really about being self-aware. And I realize, and I might joke and everything, and we have strong opinions, but overall, and just in life, I'm not that important. And if KD... Man, if he takes a look at himself and realize that, man, we need KD. We do need him, though. We need KD to bring some balance back to the NBA.
Also, so KD's wrong about the media.
He's wrong about the media part. Because if he wasn't a free agent, if he had signed with Golden State an extension, if he had told people, I'm staying in Golden State, the news would be about other people. It would be about Kyrie. It would be about Kawhi. It would be about... Now, KD is one of the best players in the world, and his move would change the hierarchy of what we have in the league. But trying to think that the media needs you? Oh, no. They don't need LeBron, don't need Steph, don't need Harden. They don't need any of those players.
Well, so here, I think KD's partially correct, and partially, to your point, just totally... It totally lacks self-awareness. Where he's correct is we do need him for content. We need great players and interesting players, so we're not just talking about the games.
Right. When was the last era that we didn't have great players in the NBA?
Right. Your point is if KD weren't there, if you removed him, then everyone else just ticks up a level and we're talking more about Steph than
my
we are right
now. My mom, as a young
now.
Athlete, told me, listen, don't think that one sideshow will stop the circus.
Of course.
Okay, like, don't ever think that you're going to be that important that they're not going to run their business without you.
But the other part that where specific to Kevin Durant is the NBA and the NBA media, I think, does need Kevin Durant to leave Golden State to restore not only some balance to the league, that's how good he is, and he and Steph, what them teaming up did, and to restore some real intrigue and suspense about the regular season. But where he's wrong is where he acts as if the reason people are speculating about my happiness, about my mental well-being, is because I'm a free agent. No, man. It's because of all the things you've said and all the things
yes.
you've done.
Mm-hmm.
Is anyone speculating about Kawhi Leonard's mental health or happiness? No. What about Klay Thompson? What about Jimmy Butler? What about Nikola Vucevic? Any of the other free agents?
And what do all those guys you just mentioned have in common? They don't talk about it. What? They don't get out in front of the media and pour gasoline on the one topic and then the next day complain about all the pushback they get from that talking about that topic.
Was anyone, and you can say, oh, well, those guys aren't as big of a name as Kevin Durant. Fine. Was anyone speculating about LeBron James's mental well-being last year? No. Even though he was a pending free agent. If there's anyone in the basketball world bigger than Kevin Durant, it's LeBron. There are two guys who we talk about their free agency and their level of happiness. The two guys who have given us reason to. Kevin Durant and his buddy Kyrie Irving. So I'm sure when those guys talk, they're like, man, this whole thing's crazy. People think you're not happy. They think I'm not happy. Everyone's lost their mind. You see, but there's... They're not the only two free agents. They're the only two free agents who have made it seem like, man, they aren't happy. They have other things going on. People didn't do this to Kevin Durant 3 years ago when he was a pending free agent.
No.
Getting ready to leave Oklahoma City because he wasn't pouring gas on the fire and because he didn't seem miserable. Kevin Durant has seemed miserable this year. Yeah, there is an element of we're playing pop psychologist. I get that. And I can imagine that would be frustrating to have every day people talking about you, how happy you are, what you're going to do. I understand that can be wearing on you. But the self-awareness comes in. There's a way to remove a lot of it, and it's to take the Kawhi approach. I am focused on this year or the LeBron approach from last year. I will talk about the offseason and the offseason. Kevin Durant hasn't done that. And with that, and with the general malaise he has seemed to be under a lot of the year, leading the league in technicals, fighting with Draymond, this is going to happen.
Yeah, but look, let's look in the last year. You and I were talking before the show. Look at the optics on Kawhi Leonard last year. Everyone was trying to make him out to be a liar. Or he was faking his injury. Mm-hmm. Or he's not that tough. Remember all the things? Oh, San Antonio, their organization, they do things the right way. And I told you guys all along, man, Kawhi's hurt. They misdiagnosed him. They didn't treat him the right way as from a doctor standpoint, not the organization, from a medical standpoint. And how much has Kawhi repaired his reputation by not saying anything but just going to work, doing his job, being a good teammate, and saying, I won't comment on free agency, compared to Kevin Durant in that last year where he has gained another postseason MVP. They are the overwhelming favorite to be able to three-peat, and he's still taking more of a PR hit than Kawhi because he's just not going about it the right way. So I don't expect this to end, especially when a player thinks that he's needed by the media. Like, there's going to be a big story, and that story is going to be Kevin Durant leaves the Golden State Warriors, and next year when we're talking about basketball, we're still going to have some of these same questions about Kevin Durant, no matter where he is. It's just going to, we're just going to move the needle from being in Golden State to being in New York, being in L.A., being somewhere else. But Kevin Durant will be a part of the media as long as he's in the league, and given all the ways the league is covered on a daily basis, 365 days a year.
Because we thought the one thing that would sort of cure all this, the one thing that would make him happy would be winning. Well, he's won, and he's still sort of similar in attitude towards the media, towards his own self-awareness, whatever it is, as he was before. What makes you think that going somewhere else is going to change
but
that?
But the other element is, take salaries out of it, the player salary. The other element as to why the NBA superstar makes so much more money than the NFL superstar is because people are really interested in who they are as people. That's why Kevin Durant has starred in a feature-length film called Thunder Up. It's why Kyrie Irving got the Uncle Drew movie and yet got NFL players. Aaron Rodgers ain't got no movies. Maybe Tom Brady could, but he hasn't done any movies. There is an element of, and KD has talked enormously, said Chris Haynes, when Chris Haynes asked him about free agency on the podcast, said, man, wherever I can make the most money. He seems very focused on stacking as much money as possible, and good for him. He's creating generational wealth. He's doing good things with his money. But part of that is because people are interested in more than the 48 minutes a night, two or three times a week. And seemingly, Steve Kerr gets it, Steph gets it, the other stars in the league on his team or otherwise get it. KD wants to have it both ways in this regard. And he is the only hurdle to us talking more about how great he is on the court is the things he says off the court.
Because the truth is, if you look back over this season, what stands out more? Some specific games, great games, or all the drama that has played out off the court with all the players? All right, let's take a break. Coming up, hey, why are the New York Giants committed to passing on a quarterback? Sorry, Giants fans. That's next on First Things First. NASCAR returns to Talladega for the wildest race of the year. Check out the Geico 500. It is Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern on Fox. Time for us to go viral. So last night, the Dallas Stars beat the Nashville Predators to wrap up their first round series in six games. And they had some special guests in the house, some special hungry guests in the house. Cowboys stars Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott were on hand to watch Dak feeding Zeke just like a real game.
I mean,
is that less protein in this? This is just
these guys.
Take what you can, Zeke.
I like seeing this, by the way. Two guys should be really enjoying life. Two buddies on a team. What? You're looking at me funny, see? I think it's cool these guys actually hanging out outside of the team context.
And
Zeke being a goofball as he appears to be in real life. Dak playing along. You don't like it? I like it.
Yeah, it's cool if your teammates and stuff are cool. Like, I tried to do that in our first year. I tried to go to a lot of games and stuff, but this guy's weird.
Oh, you're talking about me right now. Yeah. I thought you meant your first year in the NFL. You're talking about your first year with the show.
Yeah, so I can, yeah, if your teammates are really cool, they're cool to hang out with. But if they're a little nerdy, they want to do crossword puzzles.
crossword puzzles at the game.
I've never done, you've never seen me do a crossword puzzle. You've never seen me do one.
Now, that wasn't my greatest get right there.
That wasn't your greatest.
Later on in the show, I'll have a better one.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Puzzles. All right. You and all your puzzles.
Time for stories to start your morning.
I do like puzzles.
The Cardinals are reportedly holding final meetings about who to select with the first overall pick in this week's NFL draft. Their current quarterback, Josh Rosen, has also reportedly impressed Cliff Kingsbury in the short time Kingsbury's been with the team. All right, C, what do you think the Cardinals should do with that top overall pick?
Listen, if the coach wants a quarterback, if he has told the organization, hey, listen, I can bring some excitement here, he needs to go with Kyler. Like, if that was his overall approach, if the evaluation, everything, can he make NFL throws? If you're beyond the height thing, they should take the quarterback because Arizona, this franchise right now, they need a transfusion of talent, especially at quarterback. I believe that's the fastest way to change the franchise.
I'm going to be very consistent on this. I would do exactly what I've been saying for months, even though I know they're almost assuredly not going to do it. Shop the number one pick. You on the Arizona Cardinals right now, you have a wide receiver who's great but very old, a great corner, a great pass rusher, and a great running back. That's four of your 53. You got about 40 other needs.
Right.
I would turn that number one pick into multiple players, a couple first, maybe a second and a third, and I'd run with Josh Rosen. Now, I also wouldn't have fired Steve Wilkes after 1 year. So maybe if you... The whole thing is not how I would go about it. I think they're taking Kyler, even though that's not what I would do.
All right, to the NBA now. The Bucks completed their sweep of the Pistons last night. As they now move on to face the Boston Celtics, Giannis put up a playoff career-high 41 points in the win. Nick, how impressive has Giannis been this postseason?
And Giannis, I'd say, is about 3 weeks away from me removing any interim labels and just saying, you know what? LeBron James, healthy, not healthy, this is the best player alive. He is doing anything and everything you could ask a guy to do. His team is winning at a high level. He is at the exact moment of his career it's supposed to be happening in year six at age 24. Barring a second round flameout, which I don't see happening, it's hard to make the argument right now anybody is better than him at basketball.
Yeah, right now, I understand because I said that several months ago. It's nice to see that Nick Wright has come around. I would say right now, though, Giannis is at second base as far as that. He's established himself during the regular season. He's had great improvement. What got him to second base was his overall improvement, shooting the basketball this year and his ability to be able to dribble the basketball, unassisted dunks. But he's got to be able to get to the conference final.
Yeah.
He's got to be able to play well. That'll get him to third. And then let's see him in the NBA finals. And then we'll make that determination. Because the best basketball player in the world should be determined in the postseason.
All right, to the Western Conference now. Jazz got a win in game four over the Houston Rockets to save their season for at least another night. Donovan Mitchell had 31 points. Rockets couldn't buy a bucket in the fourth quarter. Nick, what went wrong for the Rockets in this one?
0 for 13. That's what they were from three in the fourth quarter. Much like the Rockets' season ended last year when they missed 27 in a row. This game, they clawed back in that third quarter to take a lead in a game the Jazz had been controlling. And then in the fourth quarter, they just could not hit a shot. They kept shooting them. Only four made baskets in the fourth. It's a bummer for the Rockets. They were going to be done. Now they've got to play on Wednesday, same night Golden State has to play.
Yep.
If they win, it's no big deal, but someone gets dinged. Someone turns an ankle on Wednesday, all of a sudden that could change what is the biggest series this team will play all year long.
It's already a big deal because they missed out on 2 days rest that they could be getting. Now they're playing the same night as the Warriors, so them and the Warriors be on the same schedule. But the way they shot the ball in Utah, they're lucky to win one game.
Sure.
They could have lost both of these games. So if you know how their season ended last year, now, you would be concerned about what you've seen in the last two games. Now, defensively, they are better. So that part right there, that's the only part for Rockets fans you can be encouraged about the last two games.
Blown opportunity last night for Houston.
All right, finally, it's been a tough series for Russell Westbrook. The Thunder trail the Blazers 3-1. That one, coincidentally, applies to the amount of points Russ had in the second half of game four. Nick, what does Russ need to do to have any chance of turning this series around?
He needs to have an efficient game where he does everything we know he can do and does it at a high level.
But just that.
Well, listen, it's not a it's not too much to ask Russ to have. Can you go 10 for 22? Can you have double-digit rebounds, double-digit assists? And can you make at least one out of three of your three-pointers? And I think for his sake, it'd be best if it was exactly that. One of three, not one of every three, but exactly three three-pointers attempted. The other odd thing, not even odd, but concerning thing that's happened with Russ is, as his free throw shooting has all of a sudden gone off a cliff, you know what also has? His attempts. What does that tell you? He knows he's not as confident at the line.
Yep.
So he's not attacking as much. He's settling more.
That's always the theory in the NBA. When you're afraid of that charity stripe, you shy away from the bucket.
You see it. I mean, he was a 10 free throw game guy his MVP year. That's down almost 40%. And so now you're seeing a guy that is wildly inefficient as opposed to his MVP season, only slightly inefficient because he was such a good free throw shooter and getting the line so often. The Thunder can hold on to this hope. Man, can we play great one game in Portland? If so, we come back home and let's just see what the hell happens. Let's see what we can do with a team that we still have not fully exploited the lack of Nurkic. Now, that part, you brought up Billy Donovan yesterday, not exploiting the lack of Nurkic. I do put that on coaching. But they need Russ to have an excellent game and to start to try to turn this ship of narrative around on him. Because Russ, the narrative on Russ is going strong in one direction.
Right.
And so strong that even a guy like me who's defended him for his entire career, it's hard to defend how he's played this postseason.
Yeah, Russ has not played well. He's played bad in three of the four games. But the conversation shouldn't be solely on Russ.
Sure.
It should be on what they're trying to do as a team. Their coaching, I believe, is subpar, has been since Donovan took over the roster. But also, Paul George, where are you? Now, I know we like Paul George, and I told you, Nick, commentary is based on how you feel about a player. People like Paul George more than they like Westbrook, but he has been bad. Now, imagine if Paul George was playing on the Lakers and had these same stats next to LeBron. He would be getting criticized, and we need to be able to share some of that criticism because Russ cannot do this in Portland alone. With the backcourt that Portland has and their ability to be able to switch the backcourt where Dame can go off the ball and CJ can go on the ball, that's hard for one guard. So, Russ, play within yourself. But Russ needs some help from that coaching staff as far as their substitution patterns. He needs Steven Adams to be able to play a significant basketball game because they are paying him significant dollars. Schroeder, the backup point guard, he needs to play well because he's getting paid a lot of money. But his partner in crime, Paul George, is avoiding. People are not criticizing him. But when you look at his numbers, it's because you just want to criticize Russ if you avoid criticizing Paul George.
And I even wrote down, I wrote supporting cast, because every time we talk about this series, we keep talking about, well, Russ is going to have to play up to Russ, and Russ is going to have to do the following four things. But when Russ doesn't or Paul George doesn't, they don't have the supporting cast of shooters that could fill in the gaping holes until he either gets his confidence back or gets his game back.
Well, but this is the other element of playing with Russ. We talk about all the negatives of playing with Russ. One of the positives is, man, he sure is a shield now. The only guy that's been a star player on Russ's team that has caught the heat more than Russ was Carmelo last year, because Carmelo was so clearly bad in the playoffs last year. But when they blew that 3-1 lead against the Warriors, you would have thought Russ was out there by himself. I mean, Kevin Durant was on that court with him, blowing that lead, not guarding anybody and being inefficient just like Russ was. Paul George this series is below, to your point, 40% from the field. He's having a rough series. Now, with Paul George, we do have the injury to play into it, and we understand that.
Is Joel Embiid injured?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. What are we talking about?
Right, and Joel Embiid just put up a stat line that nobody's put up since Kareem.
All right. You out there?
You're supposed to play. And yesterday, I was frustrated after the show. I didn't say this yesterday. We talked about who would you rather have moving forward, Dame or Russ. Where we are right now, if right now Oklahoma City or in the offseason called up Portland and said, one for one, let's do a trade. Mm-mm. Russell Westbrook for Damian Lillard. How quick does Portland hang up that phone? Immediately, like, we know they wouldn't do that. That might answer that.
You have the wrong number.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try your call.
So that might answer that question better than anything else.
All right, let's move on to the NFL now. Another day, yet another report about what the Giants will do at the quarterback position. Will they or won't they replace Eli with the 6th pick? Right now, this morning, they're leaning towards won't they. According to reports, GM Dave Gettleman wants a pass rusher at six and feels he can deal with his quarterback issue later in the draft. I'm sure it'll just figure itself out. It's just the quarterback position. CC, do the Giants have to target a quarterback at number six if you're the Giants?
They don't have to. And if you look at Gettleman, what his past is, you would say he's going to go with a big guy. He always talks about how he likes to put physical teams out there. He always talks about different decades in the NFL, how big teams you run the football, you stop the run, and you get after the passer. So if he stays true to form, to how he has drafted players, he's going to go after a pass rusher with that number six spot. Now, we know the Giants need a quarterback, but you also have to read into the personnel, how they're trying to build this. And is that prospect at number six as a defensive prospect? Because I don't believe that prospect has a better grade than the quarterbacks. I would take Haskins, and then I would be able to get some defense. Yes. Because if there were no – let's remove all the quarterbacks from the first round. There are at least 32 defensive players that have a first-round grade on them. So you can go all the way through the first round and select all defensive players, and every team would be satisfied. That's how deep this year's draft is. It's deep in defensive players, so you can get those players a little bit later. Now, there is a drop-off. Once you get to that number, like 14, 15 spot, down to number 32, there is a drop-off as far as edge rushers, but I believe there's a bigger drop-off from the one and two quarterback than number three, four, and five quarterback that they have rated.
I want to make this very, very clear for the Giants. If they like a quarterback enough to take in the first round and they do not take him at number six because they're like, we think you'll still be there at 17 and we can get more value, then very clearly, and I say this with all due respect, they don't know what they're doing. Here is a truism of NFL history. Go look up any draft you want. Any quarterback worth a first round pick, any quarterback that 10 years into his career you would say that was a good pick in the first round, is worth the first pick of that draft. The only thing worth more than a franchise quarterback, which is how you make it worth a first round pick, is a franchise quarterback who's better. So this idea that this player exists, he wouldn't be a good pick at six, but he'd be a great pick at 17. How does a quarterback end up being a good pick at 17? He's your franchise quarterback. Then guess what? He'd be a great pick at six. So if you have the conviction to spend any first-round pick on a quarterback, then you take him with the first chance you have. You don't roll the dice of, our prognostication is we have him higher than others, so he'll be there at 17. And one other note, last decade in the NFL, you can get quarterbacks two places. You can get quarterbacks at the very top of the first round, or you can get a Russell Wilson. You can get lucky on a guy in the mid rounds. Quarterbacks taken in the second half of the first round, here's all their names. I'll tell you quickly. Lamar Jackson, Paxton Lynch, Johnny Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater, EJ Manuel, Brandon Whedon, Tim Tebow, Josh Freeman. That is a decade of quarterbacks taken, 16 to 32 in the draft. Who's the best? Teddy was maybe going to be, and then his knees got blown up. Lamar, we don't know yet. The idea that, no, this quarterback is good value at 17, that doesn't exist. And so for the Giants, man, if Haskins is there and they don't take him, then to me it just speaks to the media's right that they don't have a cognitive plan moving forward.
Well, this is the thing. I know Gettleman. I have to push back on that. I know Gettleman knows what he's doing. Now, even though he might not do what we think he should do, because let's say they only have, because I looked at a bunch of mock drafts and I looked at the way guys have other players rated. And I see some people have Haskins rated, and I don't believe in their rating, between 20 and 30. So now if I have a defensive player that's in the top five, I can't jump the quarterback up over him when I know I'm not with the 17th pick. I'm still not going to be able to get one of those premier edge rushers. So that would mean if they draft a defensive player, it doesn't mean they don't know what they're doing. That means they have a lot lower grade on Haskins and or the quarterbacks than they do on these other defensive players.
But just to your point, if you don't have a quarterback in this league, you don't have a chance at winning. It's all about wins, right? Yeah. And without a quarterback, we've seen what the Giants did the last two seasons with a great running back and with a great wide receiver, and they couldn't win.
If they don't, I am not saying that if they think the quarterbacks in this draft, except for Kyler, and he's not going to be there, all are not worth a first-round pick. I'm not saying that means they don't know what they're doing. I disagree on Haskins. That is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying very specifically is this. If there's a quarterback you have graded well enough to spend any first-round pick on him.
Any first-round pick.
Any first-round pick. If you have him rated as the 23rd player and you would be happy to take him at 17, then you are fooling yourself if you think he's a bad pick at 6. Because any quarterback you take at 17, if he's successful, it will mean, if we look at his, that was a good pick a decade later, that will mean he was your franchise quarterback. That will would mean if you took him at 6, he'd be successful. If you took him at 2, he'd be successful. And any quarterback that is a failure at 6, be a failure at 17. There's no career arc where it's like, well, that was a bad pick at quarterback at 6, but at 17, we love it. Now, maybe they're trying to thread the needle to your point, Steve.
Yeah, well, the problem is you can't get the defensive player
right.
at 17 that you can get at 6 right. that they feel like, because there's at least 8 to 10 guys they feel defensively they are cannot miss, plug and play right now. So that's the conflict between beginning of the draft and when you get in that second half of the draft where the Giants are.
I also think my partner Chris is being a little cagey on information he may or may not have. I think Chris almost knows they're taking a defensive player at 6, and that might be a great player, but I feel like the way you've talked about the Giants last few weeks, it feels like for some reason or another, you are very confident that they're going with a defensive player at 6 no matter what quarterback's available.
Right. Beside the velvet tie, Nick,
uh-huh.
tell some. Save some.
Okay.
Never tell it all.
Oh, okay. All right, got it.
That well, one's just, a good one.
Just Mike. Save some.
That's...
Never tell it all. All right, good.
The Giants.
Ain't cheap.
Cheap meat ain't good.
Haskins.
Coming up, is the media driving KD out of Golden State? That's ahead on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Yeah,
what up, Danny?
Vincent Goodwill is here.
Welcome back.
What are you laughing at?
Not in front of company, please.
Oh, yeah. Exactly right.
Let's talk about the Sixers and the Nets. Remember that dust-up during Philly's Game 4 win? What was the main focus after the Game 4 win on Saturday? Both Jared Dudley and Jimmy Butler were ejected and fined for their roles. Joel Embiid had the wherewithal to pull himself away from it all, knowing his value to the team moving forward. Here is Embiid talking about what happened during that skirmish.
We love playing with each other. We love being around each other. We feel like we have a chance to accomplish something, and that's big time. You know, when we understand each other, it goes a long way, especially on the court. So, you know, Jimmy and I, we've gotten really close, it's not a surprise. It doesn't surprise me that he had my back, and he would do that for anybody on the team.
Vincent, give it up to Joel for pulling himself out of it when things really got heated. What do you think about this Sixers team? With the way that Joel's knee is and the way Ben Simmons is playing, are they a legit threat to come out of the East?
It's crazy because you would think that the wild card would be Simmons. But Simmons has been the best performer in the playoffs. And one of the last times I was here, I was saying Simmons was the guy that I didn't trust because he didn't play aggressive enough. Mm. Now, Embiid's knees, and by proxy, probably his weight, because he looks like he's playing heavy and lumbering up and down the floor, I don't know how much I can trust them. I think they can beat you in different ways, more ways than any other team in the East. So I think they have the highest ceiling. But they also have, like, the lowest floor, too, on a night-to-night basis because you don't know about their depth. You don't know which Ben Simmons you're going to get. You don't know if Embiid is going to be healthy enough, long enough for you to sustain something to get through these next two rounds of the playoffs.
Which is why, to me, in order for them to be any threat whatsoever, they got to close out this series tonight. You can't be going 6-7 games with the Nets. You need to get Embiid as much rest as possible. You need to get Embiid as healthy as possible because the really good team in this league that we have talked about the least is the team they're going to have to face in the next round, Toronto. Toronto just going along. Mm-hmm. Last year, the number one seed. This year, they got even better. They added a better star. Some would say they got better at the coaching spot. Nick Nurse has done a really good job. They have maintained their depth. Pascal Siakam, I think, is going to win NBA's Most Improved Player Award. He has turned into a legitimate, going into next year, all-star candidate. Mm-hmm. So Toronto is a real problem. And then, if you do get past them, you have the 60-win juggernaut in Milwaukee because I don't think Boston's beating Milwaukee, but set that aside. I've said all along, I think Philly's ceiling is as high as anybody's in the league. Their best game can beat anybody's best game. But am I still picking them to make the NBA Finals as I did before the year? I can't. I'd love to. I hate changing predictions when they haven't been proven wrong yet. They're still alive. Stick with it. But I can't right now sit here and say I think Philly is going to be able to put together 2 weeks of great basketball, which is what it would take to beat Milwaukee or to Toronto, and then follow that up with 2 weeks of even better basketball against Milwaukee. And you might say, well, what if Boston wins? Man, Boston's had Philly's number for 3 years.
Right.
So even though Milwaukee's better, Boston's a really tough matchup for Philly. So if they were to get to the NBA Finals, could they win a championship? Sure, because their ceiling is so high, and that would have meant they had played great basketball for a month. But can they get there? I don't think they can get there anymore.
Well, is your hesitation more Embiid or Ben Simmons, the way Vincent is struggling with who's going to be the biggest the block to keep you from the next?
Listen, I obviously think Ben Simmons is an overanalyzed and overcritiqued player, but do I think Ben Simmons can put together a month straight of great games?
Okay.
I don't. Do I think Embiid is healthy enough to play a month straight of great basketball? I don't, and that doesn't even mention Jimmy Butler, who's been hot or cold since he came over to this team.
Yeah, besides Joel Embiid, to me, I think the missing part or the missing from the conversation is Tobias Harris. He has played outstanding. He's been the most consistent player, and he makes the difference that if Ben Simmons, because he's not going to develop a shot in the playoffs, but Tobias opens up the court, and he has a post game that he's a mismatch every night. So if Tobias continues to play at a high level, so I would say I'm more concerned about J.J. Redick, because now in the playoffs, he's exhausting so much energy on the defensive end, it's affecting his shot. Barely shooting 40% from the field, either regular twos and threes. So if J.J. Redick doesn't have his shot, because it's about legs with J.J., he is a leg jump shooter. Every time he's shooting, he is off the ground. And I think because they've forced him to play so much defense in the playoffs, it's affected his jump shot. And now when he's not shooting the ball, then Ben Simmons, his ability to not be able to shoot, it crowds the lane. But what I worry about Joel Embiid is the injury is the centers he's going to face the rest of the way. I mean, come on, let's be the Nets don't have a center.
Right.
All right? Besides the Afro.
He's a good shot blocker, but he's so skinny.
Off the ball.
Right.
He is not an on-the-ball defender. He's undersized. He's under height for Joel Embiid, and they have no backup. So this is a total mismatch. This is a heavyweight fighting against lightweight, middleweight. So, but you got Mark Gasol. You got Serge being able to come at Joel Embiid. So it's important that they win tonight because the big fella does need to rest.
Well, here's the biggest thing. Not necessarily just the rest, but here's where coaching comes in my opinion. Who's going to have the heart to tell Joel Embiid, Joel, we don't need 30 from you in this next series because we got Jimmy who can score, because Ben Simmons can be aggressive, because we have Tobias. We need you to be a defender, rebounder, shot blocker, and not have the offense run through you. That's where I have the problem with the quote-unquote process and the team structure, because you don't assign roles. Players don't grow up in structured environments where they really figure out exactly what their best role should be. And Brett Brown doesn't seem to be the type of coach who has the strength and the backbone to tell these guys what they need to do.
And I think because of his relationship with Ben Simmons and Ben Simmons' different personality than Joel Embiid, I was talking to Nick about this. When Joel Embiid is not on the court, especially when he's not in the lineup, Ben Simmons is a different guy. So my problem with Ben Simmons is not going to be that he can't shoot. That's obvious. Blind man could see that right now. My thing is, when Joel Embiid is on the court, why does Joel Embiid take away his aggressiveness on the offensive end? Kenny Smith pointed this out in the telecast. So for me, I don't know why they can't coexist, because when Ben is not being aggressive, he is a totally different offensive
player.
He's
a useless offensive player if he's not being aggressive, because he can't shoot, he can't spread the floor. If he doesn't put pressure on the defense, that's where he's at his best.
And people will say, it's because when Embiid's off the court, there's better spacing. But that's not true when Marjanovic is out there.
Right.
Boban's might be the only guy in the league bigger than Joel Embiid, more of a plotting center. And so it is a different, to me, it's not just the spacing. That's part of it. But the other element I feel is when Embiid's not out there, Ben Simmons feels like, this is my team.
Yes.
I have to go do
this. He's empowered.
This is always, there's, to me.
And I believe that's a personality conflict, because you can have two guys that can take over, coexist, and do their thing. I just think it's a personality. Ben Simmons is just not the guy that's going to take over on a regular basis until he gets criticized and Joel Embiid's out, and then he's like, hey, world,
but,
look.
But think about it like this. Ben Simmons had his best game of the series in game three when Embiid was out, and Embiid was supposedly a game-time decision in game four. If Tobias Harris scored 40 in game three, would Ben Simmons have – would Joel Embiid have played in game four?
So that is – so hold on just real quick. I know we got to go, but this, what Vinny is saying there is that you're now the second person that's really plugged in who's had the same theory. That one of the reasons Embiid said, I'm going, is because Ben Simmons had played so well the night before, and there is the credit push-pull, a little Shaq Penny component from 25 years ago, or 20 years ago. There is an element of, whoa, oh, everyone's loving him? Remember, I'm the process. And there's an element, there, those guys have never seemed to be the best of friends, and there is the element of, whose team is it really? You're the second smart person I've heard say, did Embiid go because Simmons had played so well? I think it's really interesting to watch moving forward.
All right.
Who's the other smart person?
One of my sources.
We got to take a break. He said it to himself.
No.
Vince, stick around. Coming up, Kevin Durant's feud with the media continues. That's ahead on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, big show tomorrow. Former Ohio State quarterback Dwayne Haskins is going to join us live with his final thoughts on the draft. That's at 9 Eastern, only on First Things First.
That's exciting, man.
Yes.
That's really exciting.
Future Giants quarterback right there.
All right. I hope you're right.
Kevin Durant's coming off a big game and a big win over the Clippers on Sunday. Of course, he couldn't just bask in that glory. Instead, he was peppered with questions about his future. One thing is for certain with this guy, wherever he ends up, you know he's going to be the one curating that message. Here is KD on his relationship with the media. They need me. If I wasn't a free agent, none of this expletive would go on, right? None of this speculation about who I am, what's wrong with my mental, why I'm miserable, why I ain't happy with life. Nothing. All right, Vincent, your reaction to Kevin Durant's comments? You're laughing.
Man, we are seeing the vulnerabilities of superstars, like, right before our very eyes. Like, it's literally like the world is Kevin Durant's couch, and he's just on it. And depending on whatever his mood is that particular day, that's what he's going to express. And I can appreciate that because we ask for honesty from these guys. We ask them, don't be robots. Don't be like Russell Westbrook. Don't shut us down. And then when they give it to us, there's like this backlash.
Russell Wilson.
No, he's
Westbrook.
Saying next question. Westbrook.
Really? Oh, okay, yes, absolutely.
No, not,
thank you.
Not that Russ. Come on now.
Those manufactured
answers. That's a little bit. That Russ is a little bit different, CC. I don't know which Russ we getting when he pops up. But no. But I will say this. KD also has to understand that the reason that he's able to get the endorsements and everything else is because of the intimacy the NBA provides, that there's no helmets, that we expect players to be more open and honest, and that sometimes you have to be careful about what you say. And he's talked out of both sides of his mouth for a number of years. But here's the thing. Has Kevin Durant meant a lot to the media landscape until his last year at Oklahoma City? Or was he just a really good player who was coming up on free agency and made a decision that a lot of people didn't like? He was the second best player for a number of years and did not garner the attention that LeBron and Kobe and all these other guys got. So for him to say, they need me, as in the media, we kind of don't, because you kind of didn't register, you know, for a number of years besides just being a great player.
And Kevin Durant to me is right and wrong. He's right that an enormous amount of a disproportionate amount of the conversation about during this NBA season about where it has been about where will he go. But that's because he's such a great player.
Yes.
And when he teamed up with an equally great player in Steph Curry for a team that had already won a championship, it removed what we normally spend our time talking about during the regular season, which is who's going to win the championship. So we have this void to fill of talking points about the NBA, and it's not a whole bunch about who's going to win the title.
But it's also the pending free agency, because, yes, even if we just had the normal traffic flow as who was going to win, Nick, that would be normal. But we would still be talking about who's going to be a free agent.
Of course.
So we have other people that are going to be a free agent, and look at the people who have struggled and those who have been successful. Kawhi Leonard, look at his approach. Look at Kyrie Irving. Look at his approach. So not only the championship, those questions should be there because they're that kind of talented basketball team, but how he handled free agency brought a lot of that traffic
to him. Well, that's where he's gotten this wrong. We don't talk about every pending free agent like this. And you can say, KD can say, oh, well, it's just because I'm this great. Man, LeBron last year damn near won league MVP. We weren't talking about his pending free agency like this. He wasn't in some malaise because he shut it all down. Kevin Durant, the first time when he was in OKC, everyone knew he was a pending free agent. It didn't cause this type of daily controversy or talking point because he was not engaging in it. Kevin Durant, and this is where my biggest criticism of him comes, he's got to take ownership for how much of this is his own doing. Mm-hmm. Nobody told Kevin Durant, starting a few years ago, to do a multi-part, multi-hour podcast series with Bill Simmons where he lays it all to bear. No one told Kevin Durant to do these multi-part, multi-hour podcasts with Chris Haynes, to do things where he is constantly talking to us about his feelings, about his plans, about his emotions. Mm-hmm. If you are going to talk to us about those things, we are interested in them, and then the fans are interested in them. And then on these shows, we will discuss what is interesting. Kawhi Leonard does not get the money that Kevin Durant gets off the court.
Right.
Because he's not talked about. He's made that choice to not be interesting. There's a good and a bad side to that.
And there's another part that they let the family business out. Jenna, if I was to leave this show, who do you think would be the first one to know?
Well, hopefully me and Nick.
Absolutely. When Draymond Jenna's Green,
like, wait, what's going on?
I know.
She didn't know what's the right answer. You made Jenna panic.
I'm already anxious.
It was an easy answer.
Because there's a number of things. Mm-hmm. The Warriors, they're going to draw some traffic. KD, because who he is, he's going to draw Warner some attention. But when Draymond said that, we can't forget that. Draymond told him, you can leave now. We didn't make this kind of stuff up. So regardless, even if we weren't questioning the Warriors and their championship run, we weren't questioning free agency, what him and Draymond did, that exchange right there would lead us to where we are anyway, Vince.
And the crazy thing is, I had a conversation. I sat in between those two guys in a locker in Brooklyn like a week before that. And having just a great basketball life conversation with the both of them, you would have never known that that would have happened a week later. I've never had anything but positive interactions with Kevin Durant from a media standpoint, but I also don't have to deal with him every day. To that point, I'll say this. Out of all the things, and I've had to write some non-flattering stories about guys throughout my career, when they've come to me, I've said, look, you can be upset about what I wrote, or you can be happy about what I know, but I didn't write. Be glad we're only talking about your professional decisions on the floor and sort of the residuals off the floor.
Yeah, this is not personal.
This is nowhere near personal. And this is a person who said him going to Golden State was a great thing for basketball because we got to see him play in that perfect system compared to being in Oklahoma City where he was shackled and sort of playing with Russ and all of that.
Okay.
I think this was a great thing for him, a great thing for basketball, regardless of what he does next. So I don't think he should look at this as a negative, even if he goes to New York and has to start over.
And you wrote that right around the time you and I were getting to know each other, and it's still your worst basketball opinion yet. However, one last note. There are two guys, two for...
This from the guy who says LeBron's the greatest player ever.
All right, let's not do that right now. Yeah. I took a shot. That's fair. There are two pending free agents that we dissect. Kyrie and KD. KD had the incident with Draymond that you talked about. Mm-hmm. You know what Kyrie did? Kyrie is the one who went at the TD Garden, is that what it's called in Boston, on the court before the season, said, man, all happy to be here for the rest of my career if you'll have me. Kyrie is the one that recorded that commercial where he's with his dad saying one day they're going to hang my jersey in the rafters. And then Kyrie's the one who months later said, man, I'll deal with that on July 1st. I don't owe anybody bleep. When you do that, it now draws us in more. If Kawhi Leonard had given a press conference, said when he was traded for the Raptors, man, I'm going to be here forever. And a couple months later, it was like, man, L.A. looks awful nice this time of year. We talk about that more often. If Klay Thompson had given any oxygen whatsoever to the idea he could leave, well, you don't think people would be pairing up Klay with LeBron? His dad played there. His dad's a broadcaster there. He loves L.A. What would we have given just the story of him jumping in the ocean?
Oh, absolutely.
When he said,
coming
man,
back home.
Up north it's too cold, but down here it's nice. If Klay had given that story any oxygen,
great point,
we would have said, oh, is this a sign? But he didn't. KD chose to. That's his prerogative. But just like it's his prerogative to talk, it's our prerogative to talk about what he's talking about.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.